सदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 89 एंटाइटल्ड कृष्ण एंड अर्जुन रिट्रीव अ ब्राह्मणा सन्स दिस इज टेक्स्ट नंबर 13 दैट वी रीडिंग पुनश्च सत्रम आव्रज्य पुनश्च सत्रम आव्रज्य मुनिनाम ब्रह्मवादिनाम मुनिनाम ब्रह्मवादिनाम स्वानुभूताम अशेषेन स्वानुभूताम अशेषेन राजन भृगुर अवर्णयत राजन भृगुर अवर्णयत पुनश्च सत्रम आवृज्य मुनिनाम ब्रह्मवादिनाम स्वानुभूतम अशेषेन राजन भृगुर अवर्णयत Puna again cha and satram to the sacrifice avragya going muninam of the sages brahmavadinam who are expert in knowledge of the Vedas swa by himself anubhutam experienced Asheshena, in full, Rajan, O King Parikshit, Bhrigu, Bhrigu, Avarnayat, described. Translation. O King, Bhrigu then returned to the sacrificial arena of the wise Vedic authorities and described his entire experience to them. This verse has no purport, so we'll continue further. Amazed upon hearing Bhrigu's account, the sages were freed from all doubts and became convinced that Vishnu is the greatest Lord. From him come peace, fearlessness, the essential principles of religion, detachment with knowledge, the eightfold powers of mystic yoga, and his glorification which cleanses the mind of all impurities. He is known as the supreme destination for those who are peaceful and equipoised, the selfless, wise saints who have given up all violence. His most dear form is that of pure goodness, and the Brahmanas are his worshipable deities. Persons of keen intellect who have attained spiritual peace worship him without selfish motives. purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. By becoming devoted to the personality of Godhead, one easily attains divine knowledge and detachment from sense gratification without separate endeavor. As described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11.2.42, Bhakti Parashanu Bhava Viraktir Anyatra Chesa Trika Eka Kala Prapadyamanasya Yathasnatasyu Tushti Pushti Shudapayo Nugasham. Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord and detachment from other things, these three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the same way that pleasure, nourishment and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person engaged in eating. Similarly, in the first canto, 1.2.7, Srila Sanatana Goswami states, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahaitukam. By rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Lord Kapila, in his instructions to his mother Devahuti, proposes that the eight powers of yoga are also coincidental fruits of devotional service. Atho vibhutim mamama maya vinastam aishwaryam ashtangam anupravartam shriyam bhagavatam vasaprahanti bhadram parasyame asnutehi loke. Because he is completely absorbed in thought of me, my devotee does not desire even the highest benediction obtainable in the upper planetary systems, including Satyaloka. He does not desire the eight material perfections obtained from mystic yoga, nor does he desire to be elevated to the kingdom of God. Yet, even without desiring them, my devotees enjoy, even in this life, all the offered benedictions. Bhagavatam 3.25.37. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti points out that in text 16, three kinds of transcendentalists are named: the munis, the santas and the sadhus. These are in order of increasing importance: persons striving for liberation, those who have attained liberation, and those who are engaged in pure devotional service to Lord Vishnu. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Shavano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare. Hare Krishna. like to seek blessings of all the devotees so that I can speak something from the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. I am not scheduled to speak today, but on emergency mode I am here. So whatever I speak is something that is kind of almost spontaneous, so I have to tolerate what I speak. So this is a very interesting section of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is culminating today. The section of Bhrigu Muni trying to find out who among the three is the greatest, Lord Vishnu, Brahma and Lord Shiva. And he has come to this conclusion that Lord Vishnu is the greatest based on his experience. Knowledge in the Vedas is a experiential learning. It's not something that has to be just understood intellectually, accepted blindly. It's something that you can go and verify. People like Bhrigu Muni had the capacity to go actually to Vaikuntha and verify who is the greatest. But people like us may not exactly be able to do the same thing that Bhrigu Muni is saying. But the kind of experience that the Srimad Bhagavatam gives, that the understanding of the Vedic literature gives in terms of practice, Srila Prabhupada always said, don't follow Krishna consciousness blindly. Experiment with it. If it works for you, go ahead. So, there are two types of practice, or rather, two levels of at which we practice spiritual life. One is at the level of intelligence or intellectual practice of spiritual life, and another is the level of faith, which is deep faith in the holy name, deep faith in the process. Both in and of themselves are incomplete, because if we just practice based on intelligence, a lot of doubts keep coming. There is a certain point when you intellectually analyze the scriptures, the Gita, the Bhagavat, if you analyze it too intellectually, there will be a certain point where you will have lots of doubts. And the only answer to all these doubts is one word, achintya, inconceivable. That itself creates more doubts, you know. So many people, when they intellectually analyze, use their buddhi to analyze the scriptures, there is a limitation. And those who are practicing spiritual life just based on faith, if something happens that shakes your faith up, ultimately faith, we have unlimited faith in the fact that ananya chintayanto mam, you know, Krishna provides, you know, what you yogakshema vahamiham, you know, what you have Krishna protects, and what you lack Krishna provides, whatever, we have unlimited faith in that, and Krishna takes away what you have, and then you kind of lose faith. So both of them exclusively are not perfect. And therefore this is a combination of the two that really makes a difference. There are many problems associated with intelligence or buddhi. And exclusively buddhi, which is intelligence, or vishwas, which is faith. Vishwas is sometimes called as faith also, and sometimes called as determination also. Many times, we can offer a prayer to the Lord, my dear Lord, take away my intelligence. Because sometimes intelligence becomes like the greatest impediment in our spiritual progress. And therefore, if intelligence is used properly, it can be very progressive. Especially when intelligence and faith function together, it can be progressive. But if this only intelligence and this lack of faith, you tend to come across a lot of hurdles at a particular point in time in life. So there is a very interesting connection between Lord Shiva, Brahma, and this concept of intelligence and faith. Brahma is the god of intelligence. He is Buddhi Devata practically. And Lord Shiva is personification of faith. Daksha is the son of Brahma. And naturally being son of Brahma, Daksha is called expert, or he is considered to be very clever. So naturally somebody whose father is Brahma, the god of intelligence, naturally the son of such a person will be very, very clever. And Daksha's daughter is Sati, So Daksha asked Brahma, whom should I marry my daughter to? And he said, marry to Lord Shiva. So here, this is a combination of intelligence, which is represented by Sati, and faith, which is represented by Lord Shiva. So when Shiva and Sati come together, when intelligence and faith come together, in such a place, in such a society, or such an individual, can thrive in one's devotion. So there are two problems or two results of having a lot of intelligence. One result of intelligence is that one can keep doubting everything. Because even to doubt you need intelligence. Without intelligence you can't... Doubting is a sign of intelligence actually. The second consequence of intelligence is that you come to some conclusion and intelligence gives you the firm determination or firm resolve to stand for that conclusion. Because you come to the conclusion based on logic and intelligence. You are not just based on blind faith come to the conclusion. So essentially, Brahma was telling Daksha that he should marry Sati to Lord Shiva. Brahma was indicating that he should marry intelligence to faith. Intelligence and faith should get connected to one another. In Shiva's life, if you study Lord Shiva's life, he cut three heads. I mean, if you study the chronologically kind of slaughter that Shiva did, he cut the head of Brahma, he cut the head of Daksha, and he cut the head of his own son Ganesh. So there is a connection between the three heads being cut. Why cut Shiva cut the head of Brahma? So Brahmaji, he was, as I said, Brahmaji is the personification of buddhi or intelligence. So Brahma, he created a beautiful personality, his own daughter, the creation of Brahma. And as soon as he created this beautiful girl, Brahma became attracted to her only. He started running after her. So this quality of Brahma running after his own creation is something that is very common in today's world. Anybody who is intelligent, artist, very talented, creates different things. But people become so mesmerized by their own creation that they start running after their own creation. Today's world is a world of egoistic pride in one's own talent and one's own abilities, one's own achievements. So essentially, the attachment to one's own creation is seen in practically every person today. Whether he is an artist, whether he is a writer, whether he is a creative designer, whether he is a musician, practically, even in deity worship, when you dress the deity yourself, that photograph you want to keep, because I dressed. It's my creation. So the tendency of being attracted to your own creation is always there. So here, Brahma, he is amazingly great. He's an amazing creator. He uses intelligence to create something wonderful. But he falls in love with his own creation. And that was the fault of Brahma. So essentially, Shiva cut off one of the heads of Brahma. So initially, Brahma had five heads. And by cutting off the fifth head of Brahma, Lord Shiva actually freed Brahma of that attachment towards his own creation. So, whenever buddhi creates something, that creation should be surrendered to God, surrendered to the Lord. But instead of surrendering the creation to the Lord, if you surrender the creation to your ego, then you get attached to your creation too much. And therefore, that attachment has to be given up. Therefore, Lord Shiva cut off one of the heads of Brahma. Then in the story of Daksha, Daksha was a very, very egoistic person. Great pride in his heart, great ahankar in his heart. So, we know the story of how Daksha, he gets very, very angry that Lord Shiva has come for that sacrificial ceremony and he doesn't get up when he walks in. And Daksha, he plans to use the yajna as a means to take revenge from Lord Shiva marrying his daughter. So he kind of insulted Lord Shiva like anything, using abusive words, using all kinds of bad words towards Lord Shiva. Then naturally at some point Shiva got angry, he cut off the head of Daksha. So when Shiva cut off the head of Daksha, the demigod started telling Lord Shiva that the yagya is contaminated now. You have contaminated the yagya with the, you know, it's a lot of impurity now. Shiva said, the yagya is not destroyed, but rather now it has become complete. He said, whenever yagya concludes, there has to be purna ahuti. The final ahuti was the ahuti of Daksha's ahankar. So with the final ahuti of Daksha's ahankar, this yagya is complete. Lord Shiva said like that. Ahankar is one of the faults of intelligence. Daksha was given the head of a goat after that. And as soon as he was given the head of the goat, he immediately started praying to Lord Shiva and accepted the shelter of Lord Shiva. So essentially, Daksha represents two things. One is great pride of personal beauty and great pride of one's intelligence. By putting the head of a goat, Lord Shiva kind of destroyed the ahankar, that aspect of Daksha's personality. And as soon as the ahankar was destroyed, Daksha developed faith in Lord Shiva. The third personality that Lord Shiva cut the head off was of Lord Ganesh. We find that the story of Parvati telling Lord Ganesh, you stand on the gate, on the door, and don't allow anybody to come inside. So Parvati created Lord Ganesh from her own body, literally. From a chandan paste of her own body, she created Lord Ganesh. And when Shiva was coming inside, so she told Ganesh that don't allow anybody to come inside, I'm having a bath. She went in. And then Shiva was the owner of the house, so he was coming in. So he said, Lord Ganesh said, you can't come in. My mother is not, you know, we have fingerprint system everywhere, you know. If you don't have access, so many will get upset, you know. Are andar aage bahar nahi jaane de rahe, you know. So it can be quite upsetting. Lord Ganesh was standing over there and he said, you can't, no password, you can't go in. So Shiva got really wild. So, if it is your own house and you are denied access because you don't have a password or you don't have a key or something like that, doesn't make any sense. The watchman has to allow you to enter your own house. In Krishna's pastimes, we find that when Krishna was stealing butter from the house of the gopis, at one point, one gopi caught him. And she asked him, why do you steal? So Krishna gave, different times he would give different answers. One of the times he gave the answer, he said, oh, I thought this is my house. So it's a very interesting answer that Krishna gave. Actually, Krishna didn't make a mistake in coming to her house. Because Krishna is the master, he's the owner of all houses. He owns everything. So he says, I thought this is my house, which actually is a fact only. So the gopi thought it is her house, and she was thinking Krishna is coming to steal in my house. But actually the fact is that every house belongs to Krishna only. Whether he steals in anybody's house or his own house, it doesn't matter. So Krishna said, oh, I thought this is my house. And therefore, he meant that the whole world is mine. And some new owner has come in suddenly and claims that this is my property. So essentially, in reality, Krishna does not steal anything. He is not a thief. Everything belongs to him. In fact, all of us are thieves because we start claiming Krishna's property as our own. When Shiva was trying to enter his own house, he doesn't need anybody's permission. Lord Ganesh stopped him from entering his own house. And Lord Shiva tried to tell him that you have to understand the essence of the instruction. The essence of the instruction is that you stop anybody from coming inside except the owner. This instruction doesn't apply to the owner of the house. But Lord Ganesh was very adamant that, you know, nothing doing, nobody can enter. So at some point, Lord Shiva got really angry at Ganesh. Buddhi or intelligence, again, Ganesh is a Buddhi Devata. You know, he's supposed to be representing intelligence. So, Buddhi has to be very carefully used to prevent bad qualities from entering your life. But if Buddhi prevents good qualities also from entering your life, that Buddhi is useless. So Lord Shiva, he got very angry and he cut off the head of Lord Ganesh. When he cut off the head of Lord Ganesh, Parvati was very upset that, you know, my son is dead. So Lord Shiva told her that generally a son is born when father and mother come together, parents come together, then son is born. But why did you give birth to this son on your own without me being involved at all in it, you know? So he said, I will now put a head on Ganesh, and by putting the head, I will also be a part of this creation. So Parvati represents faith. Parvati represents the intellectual understanding. The result of Parvati is Vivek, which is Lord Ganesh, which is discrimination, with the power of discrimination. But discrimination and intelligence alone doesn't function. You also need faith along with it, which is what Lord Shiva represents. So the combination of discrimination, of faith and intelligence results in the right ability to discriminate right from wrong. So by these three heads being cut, Brahmaji's head, Daksha's head and Ganesha's head, we find that Shiva is trying to teach us some very important understandings of what discrimination really is. Here in the story that we are reading just now, in this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that all the demigods, all the sages, they wanted to know who among the three is the greatest. They sent Bhrigu Muni to discriminate, to use his intelligence to understand what is right and what is wrong. And Bhrigu, he used his intelligence, analyzed the situation. But along with the intelligence, Bhrigu also used the concept of faith. So here, in this particular translation that we are reading, it talks about what is the result of developing such kind of faith in the presence of the Lord, or understanding the Lord is the greatest. The sages were freed from all doubt and became convinced that Vishnu is the greatest Lord. From him come peace, fearlessness, the essential principles of religion, detachment with knowledge, the eightfold powers of mystic yoga and his glorification, which cleanses the mind of all impurities. He is known as the supreme destination for those who are peaceful and equipoised, the selfless wise saints who have given up all violence. His most dear form is that of pure goodness, and the Brahmanas are his worshipable deities. Persons of keen intellect who have attained supreme spiritual peace worship him without selfish motives. In the end of this purport, it is mentioned that the three kinds of transcendentalists, named the Munis, the Santas and the Sadhus. Munis means people who are striving for liberation. Santas means those who have already attained liberation. And Sadhus means those who are engaged in pure devotional service to Lord Vishnu. Therefore, if you study many of the purports of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada mentions, he calls devotees as Sadhus. So Sadhus means those who are aspiring for pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. Building up with the mood of what we saw yesterday, 1000th anniversary of Ramanacharya and the drama that was represented. I thought I'll share some stories of what is the meaning of true Sadhus. And these are some of the most amazing stories of Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya that I have personally come across. Each of these stories that I'm going to narrate now really brings the essence of what this verse is trying to share with us. Essence of what Shukadeva Goswami is trying to say in this verse about the different qualities that are developed in a devotee when one takes shelter of the Lord. The qualities of detachment with knowledge, peace, fearlessness, the essential principles of religion, upholding the eightfold powers of mystic yoga, cleansing of the mind all these different qualities that manifest by understanding Vishnu as the Supreme Lord are very wonderfully narrated through these beautiful stories. The lives of these acharyas, what is known in South India as the Alvars, have some really amazing insights to teach us if we see it from this point of view. In my childhood, I used to go every year to my hometown, which is Kanchipuram. And practically every year, we would spend like our whole summer holidays there. But the interesting thing is, though I lived practically all my life in that part of the South India, I never really came across the lives of great Alvars the way I am coming across it now, after studying Srila Prabhupada's teachings and after understanding our scriptures properly. Just recently, 2 weeks back, I was in Kanchipuram. And there was one man who was one of the very exalted pujaris of Varadaraj. He was not exactly a pujari also. He was, his service to Varadaraj, he had only two services to Varadaraj. 45 years he's only been doing two things for Varadaraj. One thing is been carrying the palki of Varadaraj 45 years. Every single day carrying the palki of Varadaraj. And second service is that he does backup, cleaning the vessels that are used for washing to worship Varadaraj. The bhoga vessels in the arti paraphernalia. That's it. 45 years. Never entered the altar of Varadaraj. Never in his life he's entered the altar of because his service doesn't permit him to go into the altar. So he is proudly telling me that, you know, somehow Varadaraj has kept me in his service for 45 years. And he was asking me, please bless me so I can continue all lifelong. I said, who are we to bless? I mean, people like you are the ones, the inspiration sources for all of us to continue practicing our spiritual life. So he shared with me a lot of stories about one saint named as Vedanta Desikar. Vedanta Desikar is the great grand disciple of Ramanujacharya. He came two generations after Ramanujacharya, about 130 years after Ramanuja. And his stories are so amazing and so inspiring. And they are just show the epitome of all these beautiful qualities that we are trying to imbibe and aspire for in our lives. So I thought, you know, because I heard it from that person so recently and so vividly, I thought I should share some of these stories with all of you all so that we can understand the glories of these acharyas in our lives also. I have always heard of Vedanta Desikar all my life. He has written many, many books. In fact, he is considered to be one of the most powerful people in the Sri Sampradaya after Ramanujacharya. But till 2 weeks back, I had no idea who Vedanta Desikar was at all, beyond the fact that he was a great acharya. But when I heard these stories, I felt very, very inspired and nourished. So Vedanta Desikar, his original name, his name was Venkatanath. So his birth itself was a very interesting story. He was born on the same day, which is the birth star of Lord Srinivas Balaji. So his parents, their names are Ananta Suri and Thotaramba. They were issueless. They were for many, many years they didn't have any child. They lived in a place very close to Kanchipuram. So one day, in a dream, they got Lord Balaji coming in the dream, and Balaji instructed them to go to Tirupati to worship him, and definitely they'll get a son. So the mother and father, both of them, they traveled all the way to Tirupati from Kanchipuram by walk. And they stayed, they had darshan, they were staying on top of the Tirupati hill. They were living in a mandap the night. So in the night, this lady, Thotaramba, she had a dream. And in her dream, she had a very weird dream. In her dream, she dreamt that Lord Balaji, he came with a bell in his hand. And he offered it to Thotaramba. And this lady, she put the bell in her mouth. She ate the bell. And the next day, the pujari is found in the altar, the bell is missing. You know. It is explained that this Vedanta Desikar is the incarnation of the bell of Balaji. Even to this day, in Tirupati Balaji's main altar, no bell is ever used. Because the bell is Vedanta Desikar is considered in our understanding of ISKCON, you know. Very interestingly, we also don't have these big bells in our temple, you know. Because we consider that the tongue is the bell, striker, and the mouth is like a bell that should be used to glorify the Lord. So Vedanta Desikar, interestingly, is the incarnation of the bell of Balaji, but he's also the incarnation of the sound vibration that actually preached the message of the Lord throughout the whole of South India practically. So that in that sense, he is really the messenger of the Lord. So when he was born, instantly everyone just looking at Vedanta Desikar, this small child, Venkatanath, his name was, everyone realized that this child is very special and very unique. One time his uncle, whose name was Sri Appallur, so he became his teacher also. So he took him to the temple of Varadaraj to have darshan. And while they were going to the temple of Varadaraj, on their way out, there was one very exalted devotee giving a lecture on Ramanujacharya's Sri Bhashyam. And this Sri Appallur, this uncle of Vedanta Desikar, and the small boy, he was a 5-year-old boy at that time. After having darshan, they just came out and they went to offer respects to this Acharya. So this Acharya was speaking on Sri Bhashya. And suddenly in the midst of this lecture, these two people came and offered respects. So he kind of was talking to them, conversed with them, gave his blessings. And they were walking away. While they were walking away, this Acharya was giving the lecture. He had forgotten where he had stopped. And he just inquired from people who were sitting in front of him, "Where did I stop? I forgot." This boy, 5-year-old boy, exactly narrated where he stopped. So this Acharya was so surprised that such a small child, he is able to tell exactly where I stopped, and that too it's not a regular, small things. It is, Sri Bhashya is a very high philosophical treatise. And this Acharya actually blessed Sri Appallur that this boy should be given full education and he will definitely propagate Sri Vaishnavism a lot. So at the age of 7 years, Vedanta Desikar started studying the Vedas under Sri Appallur. So he studied Vedas, all the scriptures, the Sri Bhashya, Divya Prabandhams, etc. And he was so brilliant that anything was told to him in one narration, he would learn everything intensely. And by the age of 20, Vedanta Desikar had learnt practically all the scriptures thoroughly. And at the age of 21, he got married to a very beautiful girl called Thirumangai. And he started living a life of begging every day in different places, and he would continue to maintain his family and he would continue practicing his spiritual life. So at some point his guru, his uncle and guru, Sri Appallur, he left his body. But before he left his body, he wanted to initiate him. And he offered him the sacred mantra, this is known as the Garuda mantra. And he offered him it and he left his body. So eventually, Desikar, he went on top of a mountain and he was sitting and meditating. It is explained, when he was chanting the Garuda mantra, Garuda himself appeared. So Garuda is the bird carrier of Lord Vishnu, is considered to be Veda personified. When Garuda flaps his wings, Vedic hymns are chanted, basically. So Garuda personally appeared to Vedanta Desikar, and his ears he narrated all the Vedas. So Vedanta Desikar, Garuda asked him for any blessing. So that time, Vedanta Desikar prayed to Garuda, and Garuda gave him darshan of Hayagriv, Lord Vishnu. So Lord Vishnu is considered to be, the authority on Vedic scriptures. And Hayagriva gave a small deity of himself to Vedanta Desikar to worship. So that was the kind of scholarship that this personality had. And so one time, Vedanta Desikar, he went to Srirangam and he defeated the Mayavad scholars. For 7 consecutive days, he had arguments with them and defeated all the Mayavad scholars. So at that point, he was given the title Vedanta. So they used to call him Desikar before, but he was given the title Vedanta Desikar from that point onwards. So one day somebody challenged him that we will accept you as a scholar if you can compose 1,000 verses glorifying Lord Ranganath. So the next day, Vedanta Desikar of course accepted the challenge, and he went and prayed to Lord Ranganath to bless him to compose the 1,000 verses glorifying him. And then Vedanta Desikar went back to his home, and all day long he was busy teaching, he was giving classes and all that. And in the night he went to sleep early. He got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and he started writing. And within 3 hours, he wrote 1,000 original verses, not glorifying just Lord Ranganath, glorifying only the Paduka of Lord Ranganath. 1,000 verses glorifying only the lotus feet of Ranganath. Can you imagine? And if somebody chants these 1,000 verses, it takes about 6 hours. And he not just chanted, he composed them in 3 hours. So you can imagine the scholarship of Vedanta Desikar and his ability to communicate. Along with knowledge, and along with devotion, along with faith that he had, there was also great detachment. Vedanta Desikar was an exalted saint, yes, thousands of disciples, but every day he would go out begging food, from different houses. So some of his disciples were feeling very bad that why does our guru have to beg like this? So one disciple, he decided to help his guru in a different way, without actually, showing that I'm helping. So he had a begging bowl in which different people would put different things. So one day, he put in that begging bowl, when Vedanta was going around begging in different houses, he put rice mixed with gold coins. So the gold coins also entered into the begging bowl. And Vedanta Desikar went and offered this bowl to his wife. He didn't even know there were gold coins in it. He had no idea. His wife, when she saw that, there's some gold coins in it, she was so innocent, she didn't even know what gold coins were. Because they were just so impoverished and they were so used to living a simple life. So Vedanta Desikar, she was telling him, there are some worms in it. So they actually stained the rice and threw out all the gold and only retained the rice. That is the kind of detachment, vairagya that these personalities exhibited. One time there was a very simple boy, brahmachari for very, because he was impoverished, he had no money. He went to Vedanta Desikar once and he wanted some financial help eventually to get married and all. So when he went to Vedanta Desikar, so he didn't even know that he had no money. So some of the wealthy people in the village, they told him, the only person who can help you give charity is Vedanta Desikar, he has a lot of money. So this man, he came to Vedanta Desikar to ask him for charity. So now Vedanta Desikar had no money himself. So what he did was, he went and started chanting Shri Stuti. And as Vedanta Desikar was standing Shri Stuti, from the skies gold started falling down. And he told him, you take whatever you want and you go. And he walked away. So one time a snake charmer, he came and he was challenging Vedanta Desikar. And he drew a line with a chalk. And he said, stop these snakes from reaching you. So the snake started moving towards Desikar. And Vedanta Desikar started chanting the Garuda Mantra. And as soon as he started chanting the Garuda Mantra, actually Garuda came and picked up all the snakes and went away. So the snake charmer was very bewildered because he wanted his snakes back. So he started begging him, please send the snakes back. And then he invoked Garuda again and Garuda came and offered the snakes again. So the Vedanta Desikar was not just expert in the Vedic knowledge, but he had knowledge of all kinds of things. One mason challenged Vedanta Desikar that he gave like a big pile of bricks that were all twisted and broken pieces of bricks. Nothing was even. He told him, I will accept you as my guru if you can use these bricks and construct something. So Vedanta Desikar used those broken bricks and constructed a well of broken bricks. So he was expert even in masonry, not just these kind of things, not just the scriptural scholarship. So Vedanta Desikan was one of those personalities that really took Shri Vaishnav to another level. There are many other devotees in the Shri Vaishnav Sampradaya that teach us some really amazing lessons about our spiritual lives. So one of those personalities was Kuresh. So there was one disciple of Kuresh whose name was Pillai Alwan. So this Pillai Alwan, he was a very aggressive type of person, you know, very aggressive type of devotee, and his nature was to criticize devotees a lot. So his habit was such that at least every day he would criticize one devotee, you know, somehow or other he would manage to criticize at least one devotee. So this news reached Kuresh that your disciple is going on criticizing every person, you know. So Kuresh went to this person, Pillai Alwan, and he said, please give me one thing in charity. Pillai Alwan said, ask, you are my guru, I will give you anything what you want. He said, I want your body, mind and words in charity. So now, as soon as, so he gave, he said, I will offer my body, mind and words to you in charity. So from that day onwards, as soon as he would see a devotee and he would want to criticize him, but he would immediately remember that I have offered my body, mind and words to my guru in charity already. Therefore, he would control himself and, you know, not offend. So at one point, he tried to control. At one point, he was so critical about one devotee that he offended the devotee in his mind. So as soon as he offended him, he went to his guru, Kuresh, and he said that, you know, I'm sorry, I verbally and physically didn't offend the devotee, but I offended that devotee in my mind. What should I do? Kuresh said that you go to Lord Ramanuja. He has sent him to the temple of Ramanacharya. And he said, go and offer one obeisance to Ramanuja, begging him with all your heart to help you get rid of the offensive mentality, mental offenses. This man went and offered one respects to Ramanuja, praying very ardently. And from that moment onwards, even mentally he stopped offending devotees. This teaches us how, when we surrender our body, mind and words to the spiritual master, it's not just about physical services. It's not just about our commitments to our spiritual practices. It's also about how mentally and verbally we don't offend devotees also. Physically may not happen, but mentally and verbally we constantly keep doing it. So when we say that we offer our mind, body and words to the guru, this is what it means. We understand from this story. There was another devotee whose name was Somashi Andan. He very much knew about Vaishnava Prad, and he was a very learned scholar also himself. But somehow he was not able to control himself from doing Vaishnava Prad. And he adopted a very interesting way to deal with Vaishnava Prad. Every day when he would offend the devotee, he would tie one knot on his dhoti. One day his guru saw him with so many knots on his dhoti, you know. So the guru said, how many devotees are offending? And as soon as the guru told him like that, this man, he realized that this is not the way to live life. So he immediately stopped committing Vaishnava Prad. Ramanacharya was asked by Dasharathi, one very scholarly devotee. So Dasharathi was a Brahmana by birth and an extreme scholar. And Ramanacharya had another disciple named Dhanurdas, who was a grahastha, and he was a not such a scholarly person, even from a background that was not considered to be so exalted, like a Shudra background like that. So Ramanacharya had a very interesting principle in which he would deal with his disciples. He would make no discrimination on an external level, because on an external level the body doesn't really matter to great acharyas. So to teach his disciples a lesson on this, in this context, what he would do was, every day when Ramanacharya would go to have bath, when he would enter the river, he would take the help of Dasharathi. He would hold Dasharathi's hand and enter the river. And after having bath, when he would come out of the river, he would hold Dhanurdas's hand and come out of the river. So many people were completely bewildered. What is this? Generally, when you enter into the river, you can hold the hand of somebody impure, and when you come out, you hold the hand of somebody pure. But Ramanujara exactly did the opposite, because from an external point of view, he didn't discriminate who is a Brahmana and who is not a Brahmana like that. So Dasharathi approached Ramanacharya And he asked him, what should be our attitude towards those who are not Brahmanas? Ramanacharya explained, this is completely contrary to the understanding today that many people in the Shiva Vaishnava Sampradaya have. This is the greatness of Acharya's thinking. How one should look at a devotee vis-a-vis a person who is just a scholar and externally from a higher class. Ramanacharya replied that he kind of gave seven teachings of how one should deal with those who are non-Brahmanas or not from such a exalted birth. So first thing he said, those who are preachers, they have to go out and associate with materialistic people. And those who are, you know, Vaishnavas, not exactly, they may not be scholars and they may not be doing all kinds of preaching, but they don't have to go out and associate with materialists, they just have to do service to the lotus feet of the Lord. So if you think from that point of view, they are doing much better, because at least they are not associating with materialists. Then Ramanujaya said that we are catching the boat on one hand and with the other hand we are trying to swim on our own. He said, we stay in holy places and we are at the same time going out to preach to people. But these people, personalities like Dhanur Das, they are only staying in holy places and they are only having faith in the holy name of the Lord and they are only serving the deities of the Lord. So in that sense, they are much better than us. And then he said, we as identify ourselves with Gotra, high caste and all that. But these people, they identify themselves only as servants of Krishna and the devotees. And therefore, they are called as Achyuta Gotra. This is the Gotra of the Supreme Lord Himself. And he said, we are breaking our teeth on the Vedas and Upanishads. And these people are just enjoying sugar candy straight, you know, but drinking the holy name of the Lord and drinking nectar from the scriptures. He said, day and night, we are involved in the darkness of the Vedas to find the absolute truth. But these people are straight studying the Bhagavat and the Gita. They already know the absolute truth. And he said, we chant the Gayatri Mantra every Sandhya and we do all the ritualistic mantras. But these people just chant the holy name straight. And he said, so like that he was glorifying how those who don't have external qualification, they are much more exalted than those who seem to have external qualifications. And therefore, from these exalted acharyas, we realize that somebody who is a devotee, he doesn't see externals. He looks at the internal quality only. Like Parashar Bhatta, one time he was standing near the altar of the Lord and suddenly a dog ran into the altar. And all the pujaris were so disturbed that a dog ran into the altar of Ranganath. They decided to clean up the whole altar with Gomotra and Gangajal and all that. They did full cleaning of the altar. So Parashar Bhatta, he was the head of the Sri Sampradaya after Ramanacharya, basically. So when he saw that, so much cleaning happening after the dog entered the altar, he was saying, if a dog entered the altar, so much cleaning has happened. But after I enter the altar, no cleaning happens. Can you imagine somebody like Parashar Bhatta having that kind of mood and mindset? Therefore, we find that these exalted devotees, they are really teaching us in some amazing ways what is the mood of a devotee or Vaishnava. And therefore, when we learn from these exalted devotees, we probably can learn some of these beautiful qualities that are trying to be enumerated here. Especially the life of Vedanta Desikar, Parashar Bhatta, and some of these devotees that we spoke about today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.